You're listening to The People's Show.
You come at the King, you best not miss.
Left circle, Besser, one time slot shot, he scores. Brock Besser beats Jordan Binnington on the power play, and the Canucks are up 4-0.
With Seth, Dan, and Randeep.
The biggest thing to hit Canada because the Maple Leafs suck.
On the official home of the Canucks.
Goes all the way down the ice, here's Pettersson after it. He's got a chance at a breakaway. Pettersson in clean, is tripped by Murray, but he scores. Dinky Pete comes out of the box and puts the puck into the back of the net.
Sportsnet 650.
Welcome, citizens of the People's Show. We come to you live on Sportsnet 650 on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territory of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh First Nations. It's Dan Riccio and Randeep Janda, the People's Show, with you until 3:30 today, at which point we hand it over. We hand it off to the Canucks pregame show. Canucks and Ottawa Senators tonight. Canucks facing off with the team really in the basement of the NHL, that being in the nation's capital. We'll get you ready for that one. Kevin Woodley will join us after 1:30. After 2:30, Ian Mendez on the Ottawa Senators' start to the season. 650, 650 on the Dunbar Lumber text line. Cannot be the People's Show without you, the people. So interact. Get a part of the show. As you always do, we do appreciate it.
The Canucks can go streaking tonight, Reach. Is that being positive enough?
We're going streaking!
I think that's positive.
Maybe. It could be positive. Really get the positivity train rolling for this team that will not make the playoffs for another season under the guide of one Jim Benning. Oh, now I'm being too negative again.
Oh, come on.
Ah, darn.
There we go.
Ah, jeez.
What will they say now? What will they say?
It is the People's Show. So I just finished up at the dentist.
Okay.
And
that's pretty risky right before the show, though.
Yeah, it was, right? But when I booked the appointment, I wasn't entirely remembering that we would have to do the show at 1 o'clock.
Okay, that's on you.
Ahead of a game day. But they assured me that I'd be done and ready to go, so it'd be fine. All good. Everything's good. Cleaning, everything. Doc says everything's great. You know, everything looks good. Did the x-rays and all that. And then one little thing at the end, like out of nowhere. Oh, look at that. You ever had your wisdom teeth pulled out? No. Oh, well, looks like there's one hiding back there.
Ooh.
And here I am, sitting back in the chair, and I'm like, my childhood dentist lied to me. He lied to me. Said I would never have any wisdom teeth. And here I am, chipper man, 34 years old, having a great day. And all of a sudden, you've got a wisdom tooth hiding back there.
Okay.
Apparently,
wow.
I don't have to worry about it right now, but at some point, I'm probably going to have to worry about this.
I would if I were you. I had all four taken out at once when I was 13 or 14 years old, and it was not fun.
Yep.
But at least I was 14. You are going to have to probably go through this as a 34-year-old man.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
You're probably going to suffer. And you're going to probably highlight it on social media.
Yeah.
And you will be ridiculed.
Well, we're like, generally, we get more cautious the older we get, right? When you're young, you feel like you can take on the world. You're invincible. Nothing will hurt me. And then now I'm like, I'm freaking out about it.
And after the one chip challenge, we know a lot about your pain threshold as well.
What do you mean? My pain threshold is extremely high.
What does that make me then? Come on.
Makes you the man with the iron stomach. How worried should I be about this? Do we need to pull out the worryometer? Worryometer on wisdom teeth. Where's that?
Ooh, okay. Yeah, at this point, just because I know you to be that one chip challenge experience.
You know me to be somebody who panics easily.
Marshmallowy soft, let's put it that way.
Oh, wow.
Marshmallowy.
How you say it? Marshmallowy? Can we get a pronunciation guide on
this? I'm making
it
up. I don't care. Marshmallowy. I'm going to say this is probably like an 8.9 on your scale. You're in trouble, man.
At least you finally have some wisdom there, Reach. Thank you, Rager, for the text.
Not there's a lot of reaction on the text inbox.
Who knew? People, everybody's got a wisdom teeth take.
For sure. Most people do. It's usually something you have earlier on in life. Usually. That growth spurt's coming late for you.
Yeah. I was hoping it would, anyways. No more short jokes today. Do two on one side first so you can eat with the other. That's some good advice coming in on the Dunbar Lumber text line. You know, I think about that, and I guess I can't say I'm at least happy that it's only one. There's only one. So I'm not a very wise man, given that I only have one wisdom tooth, but still worried about it.
What's going to be more painful, the extraction of said wisdom tooth or watching tonight's game between the Vancouver Canucks and the Ottawa Senators? That, my friends, is called a segue.
Well, I like it. Kanata, Ontario, the home of the Ottawa Senators and Canadian Tire Center. It's I look at this Canucks team, and of course, you know, we talk about it. What's the first move you make as a GM? That we did on the podcast yesterday, so check that out. But you think game to game, and I know the players on the team are still hoping for wins, Randeep. But do wins change the way forward for the Vancouver Canucks? Like, think about it. They have to play at essentially a President's Trophy pace over the final 59 games to get into earshot of the playoffs. So wins seem inconsequential until they can actually say, we are back in the playoff race. But what does that mean game to game? Like, do wins change the way forward for Vancouver at all? We talked to David Pignota yesterday, who essentially said, those within the organization know that the search is on for their potential replacements. We've talked about it with Sat for weeks that the search has been on for replacements. Do wins change the way forward for the Vancouver Canucks?
No, they don't. They don't.
They don't, or they shouldn't?
They shouldn't, and I hope they don't, because there's no conclusive answer with what's going on with this.
They don't, or they shouldn't is a pretty big stipulation there.
Let's be clear. They shouldn't, and if sanity prevails, they won't. And right. The reason I say that is you have an idea of what this team is. You have an idea of, you know, where this vision or this plan is headed. And even if you string together a couple of wins, even if it's more than that reach, the mountain you have to climb to get back to relevancy in this league kind of feels like Everest for the Canucks right now. That's how steep it is.
Yeah.
That's how steep the climb is. So you've really done this to yourself by starting off the year so poorly that moving up the standings and hoping that other teams tumble significantly, wins are going to be, A, tougher to come by as this team starts to play better teams. Let's get past Montreal and Ottawa first, two of the worst teams in the league. You have to beat actually decent teams to make moves up the standings. But beyond that, what do we know about this year? What do we know about the Vancouver Canucks? We know for the last 2 years, they've had some terrible stretches where it seems like at times that Travis Green can't get a response from his team. He's getting one now, but let's go back a week ago. Let's go back 2 weeks. Let's go back to last year. That has been an issue. What else do we know about this team? We know the way it's been set up from a roster composition aspect. Forwards-wise, they should be doing better. But defensively, you expect this team to be that much better, especially on that right-hand side. I don't. And Quinn Hughes can play great hockey on the left-hand side. OEL has been playing pretty well. But you still have so many flaws on that back end. I don't understand how this team, A, can even string together a number of victories because there are roster flaws. But even beyond that, when you start looking at the squad, you cannot deviate from any potential moves that are already being discussed based on the fact that this organization, the way that this team has been built for this year and going back a few, it's not in steady, you know, it's not in a steady situation right now. So you can't deviate. Like, unless they go on a historic run here and they go St. Louis Blues, which I don't suspect this team to do based on what I've seen with my eyes when they play, I'm not deviating. And there should be no deviating. I don't care. Those wins aren't going to mean that much. So to me, I don't even entertain that thought. You hope for wins if you're a Canucks fan. You hope for wins if you're a Canucks organization member. Because, yeah, everybody wants to win. Everybody wants to feel positive. But the long-term vision, the long-term plan, still has to be that. You need to correct something in this organization. And that goes from the top down to the bottom.
It's, I think all of this season is done, at least the start, has moved up the timeline in a way that, like, think about Travis Green's contract extension. It wasn't like he got 5 years, right? They gave him a 2-year deal, which essentially in the NHL, most coaches, and I know here in Vancouver, it was obviously different last year with Travis playing all the way out of his final year in his contract. But generally, teams do not like to have a coach looked at as a lame duck and in the final year of their deal. So a 2-year deal was essentially a 1-year deal, right? And we always felt like if there's no playoffs, you're done. You know, it's a do-or-die type of year for this management group and this coaching staff. You felt that way. You obviously had some hesitation because they've committed to this management group, even in times where it seemed unfathomable that they would continue to go down this path. But they have, and here they are now. All this early part of the season has done has moved up the timeline because you know already, barring a miracle, and understand it would take a miracle for this team to get into the playoffs, you're not getting there. So it's job failed already for Travis, for Jim. So wins or losses, wins, like go on a 5-game winning streak. Shouldn't matter. Shouldn't make a difference. It really shouldn't. If you've gone down the road of really searching for their replacements, you have made your decision. There shouldn't be anything that happens over the next little while that deters you from already starting down this path. And it seems like they're pretty far down the path at this point.
The question we have to ask, even if there is some success in the next little bit here, is it sustainable? Because throughout the tenure of a Jim Benning, throughout the tenure of a Travis Green the last couple of years, sustainability hasn't really been a thing with this organization. They haven't been consistent. Even when they went into Narnia, the bubble.
Mm-hmm.
That's like what that we're referring it. I'm not referring. Narnia, so from nowadays. Going forward, a couple of days ago, I made the comparison. I will not be referring to the bubble as the bubble. It's called Narnia in my books because it's a fantasy land. It existed. You close the wardrobe, and guess what happened? You're like, you never went back.
Yeah.
It was gone. Poof. So once they, even before they went into Narnia, they were not a good team. They were not a team that was consistent. They relied on their goalie. They relied on a great power play, which teams do. But were they a surefire, strong team? No, they weren't. No, they were not. And that's why, when we talk about what do wins mean right now, they don't mean anything. Because over the last number of years, this organization hasn't been consistent. If there was a sample size to say, hey, tap into that consistency you showed last year, the year before, they haven't been consistent. They don't get the benefit of the doubt. And 5 wins isn't going to change that.
Yeah. 5 wins doesn't change anything for this team. They need so much over the last bit of the season. Like, so, so much. And I know we do have some listeners that want to hold on to hope that there's enough runway left that they can turn this thing around. And I've been as optimistic as anybody in that. But just do the math, you know. If they play at a 90-point pace, they'll still be a bottom 10 team in the league. And a 90-point pace, if they play at a 95-point pace, they're still probably a bottom 10 team in the league. And that's what would have got them into the playoffs at the start of the year. And we all knew, and yeah, I was on the side of them making the playoffs, but we knew back then that margins for error with this roster weren't necessarily there. And I get it. Elias Pettersson starts to play well again. You start getting some more wins. A lot of other things have worked out for this team, but it's been the top players that have let them down most often and the penalty kill. I get it. But there's just too big of a hole. It's a chasm right now that they've dug themselves into.
Grand Canyon. It's bigger than a chasm.
It's unbelievable. Sean from Waterloo, was the Narnia phase the hypothermic hallucinations as the Titanic Benning era continues to sink to the bottom of the NHL?
Well, that's a complicated tweet.
That's
or a text.
You fixed Narnia and Titanic into the same text.
I'm a simple man. I'll stick to Narnia. The okay. Titanic one is just that's even too rich for my blood.
This one, I feel like the Canucks only beat St. Louis because of Binnington, and then going back to him for GM for Game 7 gave us the series. Canucks won that series in 6, not 7. But yes, they went to Jake Allen, then they went back to Binnington, and once they went back to Binnington, the Canucks just, you know, Binnington was not in a good spot in that playoff run, and the Canucks made sure that he had no part of any success with the Blues there. What happens when the Kraken pass the Canucks? Here's the thing about the Seattle Kraken. They haven't been getting goaltending. They're an expansion team. You know, there's a lot of things with the Kraken where they could be last in the league, and probably most people aren't going to really care all that much. The Canucks, on the other hand, are not that. And they're all in.
Yeah.
8 years into Jim Benning, they're all in. And this is what they've got, bottom of the Pacific Division. I mean, there's a reason why. You're feeling like they may have to rebuild the rebuild. There's discussions about that. That's why there's so much angst and pressure on this roster right now.
I hate to break it to you, Texter, but the Kraken have already passed the Canucks.
Oh, yes.
They've got one game in hand, and they have one more point than the Vancouver Canucks do. So that moment has already passed. Whether that happens overall and throughout the season.
And they have Jared McCann.
So, and higher points percentage, all of that stuff. So I hate to say it, but it's already happened. Is that a long-term thing? We'll see. But the standard here in Vancouver was not you should be competing with the bottom of the division. You know, those are low standards if you're talking about who's better. The idea was that this team would be a potentially maybe fighting for third in the Pacific if you really thought Edmonton and Vegas were the strong teams. Calgary surprised everybody. But I think the consensus or a strong number of people thought that at least you'd be in that 4 or 5 discussion in the Pacific. You'd be fighting for a wild card spot. This team doesn't... We've seen what we've seen.
Yeah.
We've seen a minus 21 goal difference. We've seen the worst PK that we've probably seen. I remember watching any time I've ever watched hockey in my life. Like, that is a... I don't care if they get 2 wins, 3 wins. And that's harsh to a Travis Green who still has a certain element of buy-in from his team. His guys are still playing for him. Against Montreal, they had an effort. A strong effort at that, right? Against yeah. Ottawa, we'll see if that happens. But he still has that buy-in, but the team has been so miserable and so bad to watch that it doesn't matter. 3 or 4 wins isn't going to change that. The long-term vision. I've mentioned this before. You can't look 10 kilometers ahead of you. You can't look 100 feet ahead of you. You can't look 1, you know, kilometer. You have to look long-term here. You have to look down the road, maybe 20, 25 kilometers, and say, all right, what's the long-term approach here? 5 wins, 10 wins is not going to change the long-term approach here. And if you started a process, which we've heard from all the insiders that we've talked to,
yeah,
5 wins should not be changing anything in that process.
This from Sparky. Guys, if the Canucks play at a 95 to 100 point pace for the rest of the season, they may not make the playoffs, but doesn't it mean something that they play that well for that long? It does, Sparky. You're right. It wouldn't be meaningless. But there's a couple of things I would also want to see along with that. Some context to go along with that sort of a run. And the number one thing is Elias Pettersson. If Elias Pettersson is leading this team to a lot of wins over the final two-thirds of this season, fine. That's great. That means likely good things for next year. Maybe he's back on track. And you can look at him as, again, as a guy that can lead this team to a lot of years of success. That would be number one. Because that's about as good as getting a high-end draft pick again. Because if it's the opposite, and Pettersson continues through this season in a malaise, like, yeah, you're wondering where this franchise is headed. Whoever is taking over is wondering, what do I do here with this player? And those are massive questions you don't want to have to ask. The other part of that, if there's a new coach in place and you see a process that works with this roster, which isn't going to drastically change in the near future, it's just locked into too much, and there's not enough cap flexibility to make moves. If you get a new coach that seems to have a process that works for this group, and you see that build over the final half of the season, then, yeah, that gives you hope going into next year. But wins right now for this current regime shouldn't mean a thing. That's the point we're making here today.
No, and, okay, it could be the Daryl Sutter kind of situation last year, right? Where you're in a position as an incoming coach to figure out who you want on your team, how your system's going to work, who's going to buy into your system. Is there potentially an attitude adjustment that needs to come from some of the players in the offseason? That's what happened in Calgary.
Yeah.
And I'm not the biggest of Daryl Sutter's fans because I don't know how long of a shelf life Daryl Sutter can have in the NHL in today's current day and age. But if you look at what he's been able to do, that process of coming in on the back half of the year and figuring it out, and in a lot of ways laying down the law, like with Matthew Tkachuk, he was harsh. With Johnny Gaudreau, he was harsh. Those guys have bought in. So in that sense, it did help, and they didn't win that much. But even if you get wins later on, players buy into the process, that's fine. But here and now, the team hasn't been consistent over the last 2 years with the same setup, with almost, you know, the same situation, like the same system, the same, you know, situation within the organization. So at this point in time, how much onus do you really give that now? And I don't think you can. As an organization that is, you know, we've mentioned this before, it's like a steamliner, right? It's like a ship. You can't make reactionary moves all the time. You have to be set in your way. You have to make tweaks when you need to. But if you're looking at making a change, or if you're looking at changing things up, you have to do a thorough assessment, and then you make that move. You can't be, you know, hitting reverse, putting in neutral, slamming park, you know, putting your foot on the gas. Like, those things can't happen with an organization. It kind of has to, you have to stick to your guns on that. And if this is, you know, from what we're led to believe, that it's a matter of when, not if, that still makes sense to me. Because Reach, you know, better play against two of the cellar dwellers in the NHL along with the Canucks is a step forward, but it's not the big picture here. The long-term vision is winning a championship in Vancouver. And that should be the priority, even in a season like this. You're not going to do it this year, but how do you get there eventually? That's always got to be the focus.
We got this text from Troy the Bread Guy. Whose future do you take, Vancouver's or Ottawa? We'll do that coming up after 2 o'clock. It's the People Show. You want to text in potential topics, we'll take them, as long as they're good, here on the People Show. Whose future do you take, Vancouver's or Ottawa? I don't know if the answer is going to be that pretty for Vancouver. Coming up after 2 o'clock, we'll dive into that conversation. Kevin Woodley will join us in Goal Magazine and NHL.com. This wrong answers only came from Crypto Cow. What else was found in Dan's mouth? Diamonds on diamonds on diamonds. I wish.
You're like the Sportsnet 650 version of Paul Wall. Grills.
No grills over here. But our wrong answers only today, actually, the biggest takeaway from the Canucks road trip. Wrong answers only. Dunbar Lumber text line 650-650.
Takeaways? Takeout? Yep. It's got to be poutine. You know they're coming back with like a luggage full of poutine.
Yeah. The good stuff from Montreal.
Yeah, the stuff that you don't appreciate.
I mean, a proper poutine is fine. There's just not enough proper poutine around. Too many people are making poutine, and the poutine market is oversaturated. I've said this a million times.
It's like you wrote a report on this.
It's like Adnan said last week. He went and got a poutine, and it was just like shredded mozzarella on top. We're like, where's the cheese curds?
But that's on
not poutine.
That's on the consumer, though. The consumer has to do their research, man.
Okay.
Reach, you got me here. I'm one of the most trusted individuals in this market on poutine. You've never asked for my help.
It's the People's Show. Wrong answers only. The biggest takeaway from the Canucks road trip. Answer it. 650, 650. Kevin Woodley next on Sportsnet 650.
You're listening to The People's Show with Seth, Dan, and Randeep on Sportsnet 650.
Hour number one of the People's Show. You're listening on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. You can stream on the Sportsnet app. Appreciate all of you joining us, no matter how you are joining us or where you are joining us from. 650, 650 on the Dunbar Lumber text line. That is how you become a part of the show and how you participate in Wrong Answers Only. Kevin Woodley is going to join us in a couple of moments. Before we do that, let's get in some words of the people, Randeep. Wrong answers only. What was your biggest takeaway of the Canucks road trip, which is coming to an end tonight?
Puff coming in with this one. A bunch of cold, wet rags. That's what they took away from their road trip, which is ending tonight.
This one, somebody snuck Mark Bergevin back into Vancouver in their luggage. Oh, we'll see if that story becomes true.
Okay. Mo and Langley come in with this one.
Yep.
The Canucks road trip. It's the non-casual dress code's fault. They're still too fancy, is what Mo's saying. They're wearing too many suits. They got to wear into sweatpants like a Toronto Maple Leaf style here.
Yep. Curtis saying Pettersson got a signed stick from Sidney Crosby. Wrong answers only, of course. Could be true. Sid and McDavid tonight, by the way. Should be a good one. Pokey Redick Posse, biggest takeaway from Canucks road trip. In the world of today, it's Wednesday. Okay. Thanks for that.
Marcus and Gibson's takeaway. We beat a cup finalist in their barn on the back end of a back-to-back. Stanley Cup, here we come, baby.
Oh, wow. It's an ultra-positive take. I like it.
Wrong answers only.
Nick, Canucks don't do takeaways, only giveaways. It's the People's Show. Always try to have a little bit of fun with it. Let's bring in our next guest. It is Kevin Woodley, In Goal Magazine and NHL.com. What's up, Woodley?
On my way back from Abbotsford, little morning skate out there, catching up with the boys from the Ontario Reign, the goalie crew there, and yeah, I guess I'm on my way home to watch a little Canucks hockey, yeah.
Canucks and Senators. Well, nothing's going to top Phil DiGiuseppe's goal from last night, that much I know. But let's focus on the Canucks and Thatcher Demko. I found it interesting after the Montreal game. He didn't say that he's been playing poorly. The way he phrased it, I think it was, I haven't been making enough big saves in big moments, was more of the comment that Thatcher made. And his numbers haven't been great over the last couple of weeks, but it looked like he found himself again in Montreal.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, like, he's still netting out as a positive goaltender overall in the season. I've seen some of the public numbers that have him near the bottom of the league. And frankly, the proprietary numbers don't don't share that same opinion. He's still a net positive goaltender relative to expected when we talk about shot quality and the environment he's behind. I find that you find a lot of similarities between the public numbers, which are largely location-based, and the proprietary numbers, which have a number of other factors from ClearSight Analytics. Overall, the extremes are where you see the big differences, and I think defensively the Canucks are in an area where, because of the type of chances they tend to surrender, they're on that extreme side. So Thatcher's still been an above-expected goaltender. It's just the expectations are higher. He's been good. He hasn't been great. And that's where the expectations are on this market. And that's where his personal expectations are. Like, you can only be asked to make so many grade A, as he says, big moment saves. But the reality is, and this should be a positive in this market, that Thatcher Demko expects himself to make more of those than he has been late. He knows that's what this team needs. And he prides himself on being a guy who can deliver it. So, better night the other night. Some highlight reel material there for him as well. But the other part too is, even last year when he was having a season that by the numbers graded out as top five in the NHL in terms of goals saved relative to expected and all that, there were actually still more low percentage goals than you would have liked. And that's been something that we haven't seen this year. Like, his numbers on the low percentage shots, the ones you're supposed to make, are better again this season than they were last year. So even though some of the high-end stops have, at times, he wants more, there's still positives to be found in his overall game. And I think, again, in this market, and for a guy who's under contract for the next four seasons, you're excited to hear that he expects more of himself. And you know darn well when he's working with Ian Clark that they're going at it on a daily basis to try and find those extra saves in practice before and after skates.
We were joking about takeaways from this road trip, but one thing I do want to focus on here is defensively, you know, their 5-on-5 game, is it getting better? Is that a takeaway from this road trip?
Listen, you know, ever since Jim Benning came out and pointed to the 5-on-5 game as being a strength of this team, and I think, frankly, outside of that season opening road trip, as they pointed to 5-on-5 being, just fine and a strength, you know, I've kind of pushed back with some of the proprietary numbers. They don't share that. But I will say they have crept up the rankings. They're no longer 31st and 32nd in the league defensively 5-on-5. They're into that 23-24 range. And as much as that's still not good, it is a sign of improvement. So while I don't necessarily agree, the numbers don't necessarily agree that they're a good 5-on-5 team yet, their chances for are also trending up. And their chances against at least the high danger stuff is trending down somewhat. So, I mean, listen, when you're last in the league last year and near the bottom, you know, through the first 15 games this year, there's no way to go but up. And I still wouldn't hold it up as a shining example of the future or a positive future for this team. But it has actually made strides in the right direction of late. So, you know, credit where it's deserved, even if it's at times team, I believe, overstated.
Do you expect Yaro Halak to play a bit more?
I kind of hope. I think he would like to play a little bit more. I think he signed here expecting to play a little bit more. I think it's been hard for him to find a rhythm this season. I like that they got him in on the front end of back-to-backs, and I know the power play or the penalty kill, the Bruins power play, undid them late. And obviously the first goal, he's not going to make excuses for that. It wasn't a good one. But I think that's what happens when you're playing every 2 weeks. His adjusted numbers are not bad. He went into that game 13th in the NHL, despite not having a win. So I think there's been enough there that when you couple it with maybe some of, as we just talked about, I'll say slippage in play by Demko, but maybe not up to the high standards they set for him and he sets for himself, I think you can find reasons to get Halak a few more starts and Thatcher Demko a few more opportunities to work with Ian Clark in practice. Like, I don't think I don't think it's a stretch to say that Yaro's played well enough to deserve at least a slightly more regular start for this team.
You're listening to The People Show. We're joined by Kevin Woodley of In Goal Magazine and NHL.com. And Kevin, the opponent tonight, the Ottawa Senators, they've got quite the situation in goal themselves. A lot of drama there. Matt Murray gets demoted to the AHL. How much of this is on his game, and how much of it is on the environment he's playing in right now?
Okay, I'm going to take a couple deep breaths here, because you guys may have recalled the last time we talked about the Ottawa Senators, their goaltending, and firing a goaltending coach three-quarters of the way through the season. You know, this is a head coach who, going back to his junior days, has made a habit of scapegoating goaltenders and goalie personnel, you know, when his team's under criticism. I'm sorry, that's just what I've heard from people that have worked with him at all levels. So don't love the way they've handled Matt Murray. I think if you hear Ian Mendes had a great interview with Matt in Belleville, I think Matt has handled himself throughout this at a very in a very professional manner, hasn't gone nuclear on some of the decisions around him. And from my understanding, some of the conversations he's had with the team would, you know, they wouldn't be all that flattering if they got out. But he's handled it like a pro, and yet at the same time, I believe he said he felt like a scapegoat. Listen, they're the second worst defensive team in the National Hockey League. They give up, as much as we talk about Vancouver, their defensive environment has cratered this year. This is not a full-on pass for Matt Murray. He hasn't been good enough. Even adjusting for that bad environment, he's still below expected. But when you look at the season he's had, I thought he started well. Then he gets, you know, the Kreider runs through the crease, well scoring, so you can't really call it a goalie run, but man, clips his head and gets him good in the neck. Misses time. Gets COVID. Misses time. Gets sick. Misses time. That game that they decided to go, like, nuclear on him and blame the goaltending and basically throw it at the feet of Matt Murray as the second worst defensive team in the NHL was his first in 2 weeks. There was a plan for Matt Murray when they signed him. Now, signing him to a four-year, $25 million contract, knowing that the plan was it would take a full year for the changes he was making to become instinctual and innate, man, we can have that conversation about the wisdom of that contract all day. But the reality is they knew it going in. And there were signs late last season. You know, when he was out for a month, he spent the first 3 weeks working and skating every day with the goalie coach that they actually fired after 3 weeks. Then he came back and he looked really good. You can see the changes that he had made pay off. And I saw signs of those changes paying off in terms of his movement, the crispness he was getting around his crease, the biomechanics of his movement and the save execution early this season before Kreider clipped him and knocked him out for a little while. And so it's there. But to sort of throw the baby out with the bathwater and just blame everything on him when he can't find it right away after 2 weeks off, like, to me, yeah, I know they've said they weren't scapegoating him, but it sure seems like it and he sure feels like it. And, you know, real easy to draw a line in the sand and point to his salary and say that he needs to be better, and I'm not going to argue. But the irony is, the day after they did it, they went out and started Anton Forsberg the next night, who had almost identical adjusted numbers to Matt Murray, was also struggling behind this team this season. So, no, I don't love the way they've handled them. I know not many people believe me when I say there's still an upside to Matt Murray, and I know the work he's done to get there. Like, I think it can still pay off. I just wonder if the way they're handling this is going to give him that opportunity to see through something that I saw trending in a positive direction last season. I mean, the guy he's working with, he initiated himself when he was still with Pittsburgh between the pandemic and the bubble. Same guy that helped turn around James Reimer this year. Same guy that helped turn around Mike Smith last year. Same guy that's tied to Connor Hellebuck. A guy I work with up in Kelowna, Adam Francilia, that we work with at Ingle. Guy's had a lot of success, and Matt's bought in. It's just there was so much that needed change. It was going to take a little time. And I just feel like rather than having that patience and supporting him, this last move just, you know, screams of ass covering at his expense. And you go to the minors and you go figure it out.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that. Like, sometimes it does take a while for change to really show in the game tape. And maybe that's what we're seeing with Braden Holtby and another big night, 927 save percentage this year.
Oh, and like, what a way to 500th game in the NHL, gets the win, so he passes Jacques Plante as the most wins by any goalie in his first 500 games in the NHL. Not a big deal. Like, that's Jacques Plante. Like, that's goalie royalty, right? And then the sequence he punctuated it with, I don't know if you guys caught the three-save sequence in the final minute of, I mean, it's a 4-1 game at that point, and he's already made 36 saves, but saves 37, 38, and 39. Breakaway, scorpion, pad stacked, glove windmill while lying on his side. Like, it was artistic Braden Holtby at his best. It was right up there with the barrel roll Hasek breakaway save against Toronto last season. And that's when you've got the best of Braden Holtby. You see some of the elements he changed in his game last year are very much a part of how he's playing now. He talked about it with me when he was here. Like, there are a lot of takeaways from his time with Vancouver and Ian Clark that he just started to get comfortable with at the end of the season, that he continued to build on in the off season, that he believes will pay off this year. But when he's comfortable, he's not thinking about it. And so he's moving efficiently. He's in and out of his post with a higher degree of technical efficiency. And yet in those moments where he needs to go goalie 911 and channel his inner Hasek, like, he's reacting instinctively. All the technical elements are instinctive, so they blend really well with all those sort of innate things that he's always... I've always been separators for him. And the other separator for Braden is he reads the game exceptionally well, and he's back behind a defense in Dallas that, after a bit of a rough start and off and on for them with Rick Bonus, they've recommitted to that end of the game. And you're going to see him thrive as long as they're defending like that, because he can trust what's going on in front of him. It's easier to read. It's more predictable and more reliable in that it'll be executed the way it's supposed to be. And so called Braden Holtby for a bounce back at the start of the year. Started strong, had a four-game blip that we found out last night from Rick Bonus was directly tied to him trying to play through the injury that ultimately took him out until these past three. Now he's back. He's healthy. He's had three great games. He's back up to a 927. I think this is just the start of a really good bounce-back season for Braden Holtby.
Well, you talk about bounce-backs. We have to talk about Tristan Jarry as well. The Penguins are in Alberta. They played Calgary a couple of nights ago. Tristan Jarry was unbelievable in that game. And, you know, the more we see this guy, is he an option for Team Canada if he keeps this up?
Well, they're going to have to apply for an exemption because he wasn't off the on the short list, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and they actually had seven goalies on their short list because they got an exemption for Carey Price. So I don't know that he can be, honestly, Randeep. I'm not 100% sure how that works. Yeah, I mean, you can certainly make that argument. I mean, he handled the puck exceptionally well. The one thing, like, this is part of the conversation that I think they have to have is how are we going to play? Because the one thing I'll say about Tristan, and he was remarkable in that game. That was a real... Like, I was like, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but watching Markstrom and Jarry the other night was like, that was like goalie porn for us. So just loved watching the way both of them played. But the thing about Tristan is, despite that game and despite some of his recent success, he's still doing his 938. When we adjusted the numbers with Clearsight and took a look at sort of the top goalies in the league at the quarter pole, he was at 936 then. He's up to 938 now. He wasn't top 10 in adjusted. He's still outperforming that environment. He's playing exceptional. He's having nights like he did the other night. But he's also playing behind a team that is second in the league in terms of not giving up those high-danger chances. And they're producing at the other end tops at the league in terms of creating them. Like, the Penguins have really built a lot of nice structure into their game this year. His expected save percentage is 910. That's the highest among sort of regular starters. He's outperforming it. He's full value for it. But his 938 isn't the same as, say, Jacob Markstrom's 938. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. So I'm not sure, as good as he's been, that we're putting him in that same stratosphere. But it still is a heck of a bounce back for him. And again, talked about it going into the season, sort of saw it coming with the change in goalie coaches there. I think Tristan struggled a lot with his post play, and he's more comfortable now, and that's such a big part of goaltender movement. It's not just moving around your crease now. It's the ability to get in and out of your post cleanly. That's an area he looks better in. And that's allowing all the other elements that make him successful, the instincts, the reads, the puck handling. Like, everything is fueled when you feel comfortable moving around your crease, and he looks more comfortable now than he did last season. So you knew he was better than he showed in the playoffs. You just knew it. You're seeing it now. But again, when we weighed it, you know, like, there's a little grain of salt there, right? Like, I'm not trying to rain on that parade because I'm a big fan and he's a local kid and I'm excited to watch him on Saturday here. But grain of salt that compared to some of the other performances, we're not yet into the Jacob Markstrom, Igor Shesterkin, you know, frankly, Jack Campbell outplaying an environment that I laugh when I hear all the Leafs media talking about how much better equipped they look this year for the playoffs. The reality is they're worse defensively this year than they were last year, but Jack Campbell is that much better. And so those are my top three right now, and Jari is closing on them, but he's not quite in that stratosphere just yet.
So I wanted to finish off on this. So like we've been talking about bounce back goalies, and I feel like, you know, the whole goalie voodoo, it's impossible to predict goaltending conversation has come up again, because you look at some of the guys that are having great years, like a Reimer, a Freddie Anderson, Markstrom's having a bounce back, Carter Hart, whom we've talked about. Like, those are all the guys that are kind of in that conversation or having really great starts to the year. You know, I feel the whole goalie voodoo thing like really does a disservice to how much work these guys put into their games. But, you know, why do we see so much variance at the position?
Well, it's interesting. I think Thomas Durant had a really funny tweet on it. Somebody had tweeted out sort of the top 10 goalies, and he's like, outside of Robin Lehner, who, I mean, there's another one for it. Like, Robin Lehner, he's always been consistent. Like, when we talk about waiting goalies, Robin's got a 913. And he should absolutely be in the Vezina conversation. He is just below those three, Shesterkin, Markstrom, and Campbell, in terms of goals saved, with a 913. Those other guys are in the 938, 940 range. And Lehner's been every bit as good as them with a 913, because that team isn't defending. So I saw his tweet about, like, basically outside of Lehner and a couple guys, you can basically – it was you flipped last year's bottom, and now it's the top. So I get why that creates the voodoo talk. But if you look at each of these guys, like, some of them are a little bit, right? Like Jack Campbell, I didn't know he'd be able to outperform that environment to the degree he is. Sergei Bobrovsky, Darren Millard on the In Goal Radio podcast called him for the Vezina this year. So mad props to him. I didn't see this coming. Looking into it a little bit, it seems like after a couple of years of insisting on trying to continue to sort of do the way he's always done, including some ways that date back to his time with Ian Clark, he's finally working with the goalie coach there a little bit. But I agree, like, he fits into the voodoo category after the past couple of years, other than the fact that, hey, he's had a couple of Veznas. The rest of them are really, really easily explained if you want to actually bother to look. Like, we saw what happened to Carter Hart's game. I talked about it. You know, the goalie coach in Philadelphia went and spent time with his off-season goalie coach and committed to sort of learning the foundation that Hart's now sticking with rather than chasing changes like he did last year. Jacob Markstrom was easily explained. Changing goalie coaches, two different head coaches, different systems, first time in those different systems, adjusting to fewer shots. There were a lot of changes and an injury that he had to work through last year. Didn't forget how to play goal, didn't forget all the foundation that he learned here that helped him grow into the goalie he became with Vancouver. And so there's a lot of examples like that. Go through the list. Like, the fact that Jari, Braden Holtby, and even Martin Jones were all goalies that I had on a list going into the season as strong bounce back candidates, and they're having those years, tell us that yes, there is a lot of variance in the position. Make that argument. I won't argue against it, but to call it voodoo is a disservice, because we called some of these things happening just by being able to look at the position a little with a little bit of sort of understanding of why some of the ups and downs might be happening, and recognizing who's putting in the work to get back to either get back to where they were or to continue to make strides so that they can have a bounce back. James Reimer, we talked about, and I didn't predict this one, but I also didn't know that after all these years of working with the people we work with in Kelowna, he finally kind of went all in on sort of a stance change, similar to what Mike Smith had made with Adam Francilia, similar to the one Matt Murray's trying to get comfortable with the Ottawa Senators. And look at the results there. So as much as I was surprised by Rhymes, now sort of understanding some of the changes he made, even with a guy he's worked with for the last 10 years, taking another step on those changes, you can see it in his game, you can see the control, and they all kind of make sense. So, yes, there's a lot of variance. Calling it voodoo, however, isn't fair, because if you take the time to try and understand it, these things are usually explainable.
Kevin, you're the best. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, guys.
There's Kevin Woodley, In Goal Magazine and Canucks for NHL.com.
I think he needs to trademark goalie porn. just my idea.
He says it so often now that we get texts about
it. We got Rager texting in before Kevin even got on the air with us.
Okay.
He referenced it.
Goalie porn. Jari and Jacob Markstrom was goalie porn. Well,
I watched that game. Never crossed my mind. Never thought of that.
So you're saying, okay, never mind. All right, it is the People's Show coming up. The Canucks or the Senators? Whose future would you rather have? We'll discuss that. The Penguins are bringing back their diagonal third jerseys. Absolutely love them. Power rank the top alternates of all time. We'll get to that. It is the People's Show, Sports at 650.